All right, you're back in the DFSR, and we're here with our daily Major League Baseball podcast for Thursday, August 18th. I am here with...
James Davis, and you interrupted my beatboxing to start the podcast.
Well, that's why I was laughing at the start, because I think the beatboxing is great.
Sorry, that was not me playing a drum sample through there. That was actually me just beatboxing.
This is your first time with us. We're from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com for short, here to help you build lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings. Right now, we're obviously rolling deep with baseball, but NFL coming really soon. Our first set of projections and our brand new player lab is going to be posted, we believe, by the end of this week, so we're really, really excited. You head over to the site, grab all the free content you want, and grab a free 3-day trial to our projection system powered by Lineup Lab that helps you one-button calculate optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings. Free for 3 days, $29.95 a month after that, and you are all set to go. James? I actually got through the whole sales pitch with no interruptions.
One take, folks. That's a professional work right there.
It really is. And also with like the added little caveat of you beatboxing that distracted me. So we have... We are going to talk. It's a shorter slate of baseball today with two early games, though. And usually we kind of skip over those, but I don't think we're going to today because I think it's worth talking about some of the options that you have if you're playing the early slate. And then we'll talk about the evening games as well. So let's get going.
Sure. As it turns out, they're giving away free money on the early slate today, Doug. I don't know if you saw that, but
free money Thursday. Let me
catch this by saying I'm actually not a financial advisor, and there's no such thing as free money. All my disclaimers, but yeah, it looks phenomenal slate.
Why?
Great question, dude. Set me up there. Well, first of all, I mean, in a two-game slate, there's usually two major problems. Either not enough good pitching or not enough good hitting.
Right.
Best in the business. Today, we actually have both. So you have Arrieta, who's got an overwhelming, one of the bigger money lines of the season, going against Milwaukee. Very, very reasonably priced. He's going to be at like 100% starting cash game. So what can you do there? But then you actually have two or three really good stacking options too in Boston and Detroit and Chicago as well. You know, you can take Boston against Matt Boyd, the lousy lefty, or you can take Detroit against the corpse of Clay Buchholz there. All look great. And the Cubs against Zach Davies. I mean, these are all great options. I mean, this might be a case of just so many options where it's going to be hard for people to make bad lineups. Given that there aren't a lot of like other distractions out there, but this just all looks great.
Well, you start by So I always think this, and then I'm always proven wrong. So I don't know if it's.
What do you mean by proven wrong? You mean like people manage to squeeze in like playing righties against Arrieta today somehow, or like?
Or they just don't play Arrieta. Yesterday it was Archer. So I actually, you know, I did the.
How could you not play Arrieta today?
Well, no, okay, I agree with you. I'm not saying that you're not going to. What I'm saying is, so yesterday I went through the same exact sort of process where it was. Archer was an overwhelming favorite on the early slate. Great match. Just really every contextual piece you would want to start someone in cash. And on FanDuel, he ended up being 88%. Now, of course, that's extreme chalk, but you get in 12% of that money right away got their money in bad, right? So I guess I'm saying is if you can get even like at 90%, like if you're going to just basically play a little less than rake free because someone convinced themselves to not play Arrieta in this case, it's worth it. And I know that's extreme chalk, but people find a reason. I never know how, I can never explain how, but they just still find a reason to do it. And you know, when you submit those cash lineups and you see Arrieta at, I mean, I'm going to guess like 90% because the price isn't even that much, but that's just 10% of just people just that made big mistakes going in.
Yeah, fair enough.
Okay, so I think so I don't know if we need to go like totally crazy on a player by player basis, but it was worth it just to mention this is just one of those situations it's worth it to take advantage of. The only problems with early slates like this is just there are not that many people playing. It's a Thursday afternoon, people are at work. It's only two games. It's only two games, and so the only issues there is just like is finding enough games. I think otherwise, I think we're pretty much locked and loaded, ready to go. All right, let's move it over to the evening slate. I think we have some interesting things going on here as well. We have a couple, I would call them ace-level pitchers going, along with some maybe mid-tier options. Let's start with pitchers. We have Bumgarner and the two most expensive guys are Bumgarner and Fernandez today. If you were to pick them sort of heads up, who do you think you would take, maybe the decision's more in the margins for you on those guys?
Yeah, I mean, it's awfully close. I think you're kind of, the hairs you're splitting here are Bumgarner, better matchup, better park, but terrible, just runs so bad and having DeGrom face him instead right. of, you know, Jose Fernandez, for instance, who's up against Dan Straley. The Reds, you've pointed this out, but are going to be even worse against righties than they were before losing Jay Bruce earlier this season. So he's got a nice matchup too. I mean, they're both just great. They're both expensive. It's going to be tough to go too terribly wrong putting either of those in your cash games. So I guess more it's more of a question, who do you trust more for upside for big tournaments? And there, for me, it's probably Fernandez just because the K rate is that much better. And maybe Bumgarner gets a safety nod due to the better park, but I don't think, you know, if I saw either of those guys in your lineup today, I wouldn't call you names.
Yeah, I think it's hard to evaluate. I agree with everything you said there with the parks and the Reds lineup. Like, they're batting like Tony Renda near the top of the lineup now.
That's good because it was all true. Makes sense that you would agree with true things that I said.
Yeah, I know. I was trying to think of something like witty. I was trying to think of something like witty
yeah,
to come back there.
Awesome.
I'm tempted to go back.
If you want to pause and come up with a clever comeback, I'd be fine with that.
I'm practicing for the groundlings with that kind of like that kind of improv stuff right there. We're just like, yeah, and then just pause, and then the smoke comes out of my ears as I try to think of something funny to say. The thing with Bumgarner and Fernandez is where you actually, I think, can get safety is playing different sites today. So on FanDuel, they are around the same price, where Bumgarner's just 300 more than Fernandez. And we have Bumgarner projected for a few more points than Fernandez simply because of the things you mentioned, Park. And I mean, the matchups in the Mets still have a couple guys in the lineup, but they're not totally scary. But the difference is on DraftKings, Bumgarner's 13-6 and Fernandez is 11-9. You get a huge savings on Fernandez on DraftKings. Yep. So I think that is actually where you hedge your money in terms of playing each guy and getting exposure to both. It's still almost pretty coin flippy for me on FanDuel. I think maybe we're a little low on Fernandez, all things considered, but that's where I think I would make the distinction, is just play on different sites, take advantage of sites pricing guys differently. Like 13-6 for Bumgarner is really expensive.
It's a lot.
So that is okay. So after those two guys, we have, you mentioned DeGrom, Danny Salazar coming back from injury today. Any of these other guys, where are you going for maybe starting pitcher two? I don't think you can roster Bumgarner and Fernandez together on DraftKings. That's
no,
a lot
it doesn't
of
look
salary.
Like it. You got to be a little bit concerned with a guy always coming back from injury, especially with Salazar just being so bad. I mean, he had two quite bad starts in a row.
Right.
Then he goes, you know, misses a start, and now he's back. So pitchers are so finicky, and we've talked about how pitch counts are such a big thing this year. Salazar, an electric upside talent, and a guy I was looking to play a lot earlier in the season before, you know, because his pitch counts actually were drifting up towards the teens before this injury thing happened. Maybe a chicken or the egg thing there. I don't know. But he's kind of erratic anyway, so I'm not sure that he's the safest of the safe. You know, I will say Vegas seems to think he's going to be pretty good here. Cleveland's heavily favored, -195 with that 8.5 total. So, yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure I'm feeling comfortable jamming him as my pitcher two on DraftKings, though.
I'm not comfortable either, and I'm trying to evaluate whether it's me rostering Salazar for those two games before the DL and sort of just having it stuck in my mind PTSD style, where I'm just worried because here's the thing. There's the Indians are in it this year. They have no reason to rush him back at all. So the fact that they did bring him back makes me feel like he just has to be totally fine. Now, they thought he was totally fine before he went on the DL, and he was like, oh, my arm's fine, and then he got totally blown up. He's like, you know, JK, it actually really hurts, and I can't throw. So this is where I think there's enough worry beyond just the I got burnt by this guy narrative, which I get why you do it in baseball, but I try really hard not to subscribe to it. But, yeah, there's enough question marks here, and – yeah, I don't know. I think I'm with you.
So let me kick it to you, because this is a question we get a lot in the chat as well. At what point do you go away from the optimal lineup, or how many points are you willing to give up to go to a next lineup? Because if you exclude Salazar in our Danny tool, if you exclude Salazar in our DraftKings tool,
optimal Danny lineups,
you start to get
yeah.
Fernandez and Bumgarner lineups, but they are 3 points worse. So they go down from 112 projected points to 109. But that is the legit, if you're not playing Salazar, that's the next best lineup. So how are you feeling about something like that?
Yeah, that's a great question because
two points, actually.
I'm not willing to do a lot of times is downgrade a projection on a guy, like in this case Salazar, where I just don't think we're like so bullish on him anyway. I think this is projecting him to be a regular Danny Salazar, you know, regular, healthy. We assume he's healthy. If a team is playing a guy, we have to just basically assume he's healthy outside of just some crazy other thing. And especially with pitchers, right? So and Indians are a smart organization too. So it's not like I don't know what a dumb organization is. There are.
I was gonna ask just to
the Nationals.
What your metrics were on that.
the Nationals are a dumb organization, I think. But like the the Indians just don't strike me as that, and there's just no reason to bring him back unless they were 100% confident he was good. He was good to go, I think, right? So at that point, for $9,000, the other thing is salary concern here, right? So if you thought Salazar was, I don't know, 90% of the pitcher, so you give him a 10% downgrade to something like 18 points, which is 10% less than we have him for now, he's still in optimal lineups. So at that point, I think I do feel maybe comfortable doing it, right? So I'm like, okay, well, maybe he goes 90 pitches instead of 100, and that's his floor. Or maybe that's even his ceiling. I don't know. I think I'm – does that make sense? Does that thought process make sense?
No, I think it does. I think with the injury thing, I mean, the other one – yeah, no, I think you're spot on with that. I do think that we have him projected at 5.92 innings pitched, which users won't be able to see. That's a behind-the-scenes number. I wonder if that's a little bit high, given that he's gone 2, 4, 6, 5, 5. Like, I wonder if the truth is more like, you know, closer to 5.3 innings. But to your point, that's just a little bit more than a 10% downgrade. And when you do downgrade it by 10%, now you're actually splitting hairs on the projection. It's very, very, very close between the two. So I guess my take on this today is if you want to exclude Salazar for injury concerns and run the two big boys, I think that's very, very reasonable. You're still getting some good bats. Theoretically, more cheap value will come online, especially this time of year later as the day goes along. So I don't know. It's a philosophical question. I do think you can go double big.
No, you're right. The numbers will the projected outcome, the projected lineups will come closer to each other as the lineups come through today. As you're just getting more opportunities to fit Bumgarner in. I guarantee this is the number one question we answer in chat today. I suspect coming into the evening lineups if we have a chat.
So room. I think you should do it, and Doug stupidly does not think you should do it.
Well, I'll be the one. Well, good news for you is I'm the one in the chat room tonight. It's my night to be in the chat room, so I will be the one fielding this question. But I think that this will be
no angry text about Danny Salazar then later on tonight.
I've also tried that. Another thing is like let everyone remember the good feelings we had now, so that that doesn't really stop people from later if something goes wrong. I found so
hey, there's been a good feeling. Shout out to Tyler who. Took down second in that a big tournament on FanDuel yesterday. The early only squeeze, $3,500, not a bad cash.
Yeah. Tyler's one of our big commenters in there most nights, and we were all kind of in the chat room last night, somewhere around like 6 o'clock hour, sweating.
Exactly. It was early. Focusing on putting our own lineups in, but instead focusing on Tyler.
Yeah, it was like it was kind of a fun little sweat though, because the chat room we have up on our site, we have a nice little community being built there. A lot of the same people, a lot of the same guys and gals in there every day talking baseball with new people jumping in and out. And right around that 6 o'clock hour, there was a pretty big contingent in there rooting for him to take it down. And it was just a cool feeling to kind of be all in together. Because, you know, when we run our optimal lineups, and our users do too, we say, like, look, we put our money where our mouth is too. We run these lineups as well. And I know every night how they're doing because that's how I'm doing. So, you know, Tyler had gone a little off board with some of the other plays, just because that's what you have to do in GPPs where you're multi-entering. But yeah, it was a cool thing to see and a cool community building thing. And congrats to him for the nice little payday. Okay, so we have Bumgarner, Fernandez, Salazar. What about a guy like DeGrom today? Talent is there. Big. He's an underdog against Bumgarner. Can you go off board and play him maybe for a tournament, or is just the spot not good enough?
I don't think the spot is good enough. I just don't. I mean, giving up so much win equity is really, really hard. And unlike Bumgarner, who's opposing him, the Giants are just not quite as bad a matchup, or not quite as bad a lineup. So I guess I just don't see the reason to do it. I mean, again, big tournaments, blah, blah, blah. You can do whatever you want there, but I'm not going to bother for cash games.
The one other guy that I find somewhat interesting, more from a tournament perspective than a cash game, I think I'm sticking with the three guys that we mentioned at the top for cash games, and I don't think we need to deviate too far off that. Though, I will say, this guy, what do you think of Matt Shoemaker? He's had an interesting season, but I'm wondering if I could get some of your thoughts there.
Yeah, sure. So Shoemaker's a guy, kind of interesting. You can't call him a breakout, but we have seen some incremental gains for him. Mm-hmm. Uptick in K rate, downtick in walk rate. You know, he still gives up a lot of fly balls, but that hasn't translated nearly as much to home runs as it did last year. Like last year, the big problem with him was the 1.6 home runs per nine that he gave up. This year, he's down to one home run per nine. If his minor league numbers are to be believed, he's actually running hot on home runs allowed this year. But if we're looking for big tournaments, obviously, like, giving up any home runs is going to kill most of your upside. So we're not going to sweat that too much. So, you know, when I see a guy with that profile to start out, I'm starting to think, okay, well, this guy's a candidate, and then it's going to jump down into the try to get into the guts of thing and see if, you know, it's a logical big play to make. Now, the Mariners are not nearly as bad against right-handed pitching as they can be against lefties just because they're so lefty-heavy. So yeah. I mean, again, for the pitcher two slot, he's so cheap. This is a price. I assume that you're putting him forth more as a price guy than a, you know, a true talent guy, let's say. But the Mariners, not a phenomenal matchup. So it's hard to, like, a lot of times you can take a guy, so like say Salazar, who if Salazar put up the best line of the day, you wouldn't be shocked. Shoemaker's not that guy. He's not going to put up the best line of the day, but at that price, he doesn't need to.
Yeah, so. The Mariners are smart. They do play matchups. They've done it all season long where they will stack lefties. They'll go like Aoki, Smith, Cano, Cruz, and then Seager. So you have to face four decent lefties until you get to the, you know, into the bottom of the order. And the bottom of the order is not even terrible when they face righties. But Shoemaker, I just find interesting because his peripherals are so good. So when you get a guy, you know, with 8 Ks per nine and less than 2 in the 7,400 range, his peripherals just do sort of start creeping to the top. Like if that money line were to change at all, or if we were to like downgrade Salazar at all, he'd be pretty close on DraftKings just because you're getting nice makeup for mid-tier or less salary. That's where I find him to be.
Well, and again, and when you're speaking to upside, the home runs, you know, you can kind of cross them off, right? Because obviously, again, if you give up home runs, it's hard for you to be in a winning GPP lineup. So if you just want to play him and say, well, on a game where he doesn't give up any home runs, how happy am I going to be with this investment? He could be a guy. I mean, he did have that 13 strikeout game last month. So it's not like he can't do it. But if you look at his K profile overall, 3-3-4-1-5 since that 13 strikeout game, where I assume he took steroids before the game or whatever.
Just to be fair though, and he's in the same situation today because it's against Seattle. But Cleveland, Seattle, Oakland, and KC are just teams that do not strike out very much. Now, again, I'm making the case for him against Seattle, running it back. So, yeah, I'm with you. I just thought it was
teams that don't strike out against a guy without strikeout stuff is not.
Well, he has strikeout,
and he does
he
have strikeout stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
But against a guy without elite strikeout stuff, that can be a recipe for trouble, right? Because like Jose Fernandez against Seattle, Seattle's K rate matters a little bit less, right? Because Fernandez just strikes everybody out.
Right.
Shoemaker's not that guy. He gets by more on deception as opposed to like an electric fastball. So I don't love his chances of being in a GPP winning lineup. Again, the fantasy point totals around that 51-point game, not impressive at all, even dating back in June now. So I don't know. I'm not in love with it, but again, for the value, this is where you shouldn't trust your gut because what I would suggest doing is just sticking him in a lineup, and then if that lineup looks good to you because you have all the expensive bats, then maybe you're doing something, you know.
All right, so I think those are the guys that I found interesting. Was there anyone else I sort of missed here, or are we kind of good to go on pitching?
No, I think we're pretty much good to go. Again, just because for cash games, the decision is so obvious for me that I don't know that we need to dwell on pitching for too long.
Yeah, I think you can maybe – there's like some Archie Bradley case only because he's going in San Diego against the Padres. He's shown – you know, he's striking out almost a batter an inning. His problem is he just walks the ballpark. He's walking more than 4.5 per nine. But he's like one of those guys where, you know, if he could just limit the walks a little bit, he has a great matchup and a great park. So – and with, I think he's a slight money line favorite going in – yeah, just a tad. So he's a guy that I could see showing up in maybe something if he were to just sort of put it all together for a game because he has some of those other things in play for him, but not by any means safe at all.
Yeah, sure. Well, actually, I do have one good GPP play too if you want to – and I assume he's actually going to be somewhat chalky for GPPs given the hot start is Joe Musgrove.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he followed up the 10, what was it? Yeah, 10 Ks per nine in AA this year with 10 Ks per nine so far in a very, very small sample in the majors. But, you know, 10 Ks against one walk is truly insane peripherals, and that's what he did in the minors as well. So no real reason to believe that he can't approach that in a given game. So unlike Shoemaker, Musgrove is in a similar price range. Shoemaker really, or Musgrove really does have that.
Yeah, that's a good call. You know,
top tier upside.
I kind of glossed over his name, and that was probably a mistake. That's a good call. We should have spent more time talking about him than Shoemaker. I think the fact that he goes seven innings in his first two starts is, or excuse me, two of his first two starts. Yeah, that's a great spot, and his profile is much better than Shoemaker. Yeah, you did a better job than me, buddy. You called that a better play than I did. So
too bad we don't have a producer to make a drop of that.
I'll probably just X out my Shoemaker thing, and I'll say, what do you think about Musgrove? what do you think about Joe Musgrove? That's a guy I was really looking at.
Sounds like you're feeding me.
And then you talk about your Musgrove thing. Okay, let's head over to the bats here. So whenever we get a longer list of pitchers to talk about, that typically translates to a shorter list of batters to talk about, because there are even the guys we sort of made cases against for pitching, like a guy like Shoemaker, like four and against, it still doesn't mean that we can safely roster the bats against them. And that's where this evening slate sort of breaks down for me. What were your initial, you ran an optimal lineup and then looked at the hitters. What was your initial reaction?
My initial reaction was something inappropriate that wouldn't be good for our our podcast here. I asked you not to record, and then you broke my trust and recorded it anyway. So
and then I don't like
that very much. but my initial impression, is that it's a very, very weird slate, because even like the so-called bad pitchers on today's slate, like Jared Eichhoff, for instance, or some other bad, Carlos Rodon, and these are, again, the quote-unquote bad guys. Like, there aren't really a lot of just true terrible guys. The ones that I'm liking the most, I guess, like if I had to really break it down, I do like the Indians and a lot of the right-handed bats against Rodon. And then the other team I'm really looking hard at is the Nationals. The Nationals have a nice run line too. They're up against Rob Whalen, who's been bad, but I'm not, there's no obvious, like, I mentioned with the early slate, there were three teams in the early slate that would be the best stack in the late slate.
I wish the scheduling people had just moved of these games over to the evening, and we probably would have been okay. It's just weird. You have to go pretty far down the list to find a guy that I would consider significantly below average, like in Clemens, maybe. So you mentioned the Indians. Indians don't show up a lot right now in our optimal lineups. Why do you think that is? They have the highest run line on the day, but I think I have them implied for 5.05 runs, which is the highest kind of by far of any team going in. But those guys don't show up a ton in our right now projected lineups. Why?
Well, part of it's the price always. Like, we're talking about commodities here. So guys like Carlos Santana, they just start to get pretty expensive for their projected production on a given day. Right now, as of this moment, there are two guys in the optimal lineup from Cleveland, in Lindor and Guyer. So I guess that's part of it. Another thing about Rodon is the implied run total is high for this game, he is a guy with, top tier K stuff. So while the Indians aren't a huge strikeout team, that can, make it kind of choppy for guys to put up big totals on the board. I'm not totally sure, frankly. I think it's mostly that the margins are so thin today that, while that's the highest total, it's not proportionally higher than it would be on a normal day. So
right,
being the highest run total game doesn't make as big a difference as it does normally.
Well, this is actually their lowest implied run total from the last, I think, like four games or something, if I'm remembering correctly. They've been sort of in that 5.5 to 5.6 range over the last two or three days, and they've put up numbers. They're kind of like Cubs light, right? They're not as good as the Cubs, but they just run so deep down that lineup, and they'll play matchups against you. And especially, too, it's a significant boost for them to have guys like Santana and Lindor hitting in the middle of the lineup that are switch hitters. So they never have to they're never getting a bad side of the matchup platoon-wise necessarily in that. I mean, both those guys have better platoons from one side. I believe both hit better from the left side off the top of my head. But they're all really good plays today. But like you said, Rodon's not a bum, right? It's just the Indians' run total is high because they're a good team. So that's where it's going to be. It's going to be a little bit weird because I can see why
and the Indians are better against left-handed pitching this year too,
which makes sense because those guys that I mentioned, like and Rajay Davis, they get a boost from having Davis hit at the top of the lineup. You know, they get a boost from Guyer, who will probably hit around the middle of the lineup, maybe like sixth here today. They have Napoli in the middle. They have guys that can hit lefty pitching for sure. But you mentioned like Rodon has decent numbers.
He's got a good K rate anyway, which again can really increase the downside of a given team on a given day. It definitely takes some of the safety out of the element. I don't know. I think it's possible that we're just parsing it a little bit too deeply here. I think it could just be a case of, like I mentioned, Washington. That game has a 9 total, and while Washington's not as favored as Cleveland is, like it stands to reason that their lefties like Murphy and Harper could do some damage there. I think the other thing is that when you're paying a premium on pitching on a day with worse hitting overall, that it's going to make sense that you're just going to wind up with essentially value plays at most positions. And that takes away a lot of your ability to, like when it's already a thin day, that takes away a lot of your ability to, you know, go stack the most expensive team if it's not a clear cut case, you know?
Right. And that's going to be the case because the Indians right now, I would suspect, are priced at the very top end of their range because of recent performance. And they've just been good all year. And there's some upside for these guys now, but you're not necessarily getting a bargain on them. It isn't like they've been running bad for 2 weeks, and now you're like, oh, perfect time to grab these guys, right?
Exactly.
It's like Carlos Santana's 3,000 or something like that. It's not the case. He's pricing that almost, you know, almost 4 range. You know,
he's 200 cheaper than Bryce Harper,
which I was going to mention next, who's still only 4,000 on FanDuel. That is an easy play for me. Thankfully, the amount of Bryce Harper !! Well, I've screwed that up because I can't say all those symbols correct. But those questions have decreased for us, thankfully, because he's just gotten a little bit out of his...
scoring 20 fantasy points a game for the last 4 games,
right,
or whatever.
He started getting less unlucky than he was getting before and, you know, reduced his K's a little bit, also with the cores, which is always going to help. So,
yeah,
thankfully, just don't have to field as many Bryce Harper questions as has happened in recent memory. All right, so let's go... You know, I mentioned those two teams as the top end of the overall raw points category. Let's find.
Yeah, I've got another good team.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
The Dodgers.
Whoa!
Boom!
I'm not that surprised.
Mic drop. So the Dodgers.
Heyo!
Thanks. That was kind of a big moment to share that with you. So I appreciate your enthusiasm. The Dodgers. They actually do have a couple of these value guys in a solid matchup with Eichhoff. I mentioned he's not terrible, but he is a 4+ xFIP guy, so certainly well below league average. And they do have some value lefties. Reddick's still very affordable, can bat in the middle of that lineup against right-handed pitching. And Chase Utley, another guy who, you know, you're not excited to pump in there necessarily, but still solid. So
Utley's a funny guy, and he's illustrative in how DFS works for the masses, I think. Where the 2 days before he faces Velasquez, no one really plays him. I kind of get why. Velasquez is kind of an arm. We talked about it on the podcast where
I specifically recommended you play him in that game.
No, I know. I was going to say, and I was distrustful of the line, and then because the implied run total was really high in the Dodgers, and I was like, ooh, this seems wrong, and then the Dodgers just kind of put up like 13 runs or something like that. And Utley hit 2 home runs. No one played him. Then the next day, yesterday, he's something like a 50% start in cash games. Now, there's... He was in a good spot, so don't get me wrong. He's facing Jake Thompson. He's in a good spot. Our system had liked him basically the same for the both days in a row. But I guarantee if he goes over 4 the day before, he's like a 20% start, maybe, right? It's funny how DFS will just put people on someone's radar, and then he like went over 4 or something yesterday. He stunk. So it's just funny how a single day's worth of, you know, you hit 2 home runs in a day, and now all of a sudden it's like, oh, the guy's so hot, I have to play him. You know, it's just really, it's funny how I would say it wildly swung ownership percentages on Utley yesterday because people just looked at that game long. Yeah, they're like, oh my god,
he's
40
a different
points.
Guy today because he had 2 home runs yesterday. Like,
right again, ridiculous. He was a good play both days. So don't get me wrong, he was a good play. I think he was in our optimal lineups yesterday because he was just a good play, but it had nothing to do with the 2 home runs. But I think his ownership percentage was influenced by the 2 home runs.
No, you're absolutely right, and then you know, that's the exact case of, it's the old Warren Buffett, you know, buy when people are fearful and sell when people are greedy. You know,
right.
That's a paraphrase for all you stock nerds out there who want to correct me. but like with Utley, so yeah, you look at his last 8 games. His average points scored was 13.37, right? Now, granted, he scored 50 of those in one game, but you don't know which game he's going to hit the 2 home runs, right? So that's to Doug's point. But 13.37, while that doesn't sound all that exciting, that would make him like the highest guy we have projected in terms of total points for bats today is 14.89. So that would make him second of all the guys projected today. Now, granted, he probably ran a little hot in that thing. He's not going to be a true talent 13 fantasy points a game guy for the season, but you just can't look at a guy based on one game or two games. It's exactly why the sample size things matter so much in baseball.
Yeah, and I don't know. We get people, I just know for a fact, people get way too caught up in that. And I get why, but if you want to look at, you know, if you want to look at, quote, fading somebody on a given day or, like, getting away from a bat that's going to be higher owned, just look at who did really well the day before and just go the other way. All things being equal, if all other inputs are the same, because there's just nothing to streaks at all. And if you disagree with me, I will send you multiple links to studies done. There's Doug at dailyfantasysportsrankings.com. Say, I want the links, and I'll send you links to research that say there's nothing predictive about streaks in baseball. After the Dodgers, who I'm with you, those guys are all coming in a little lower price. Utley, Gonzalez, Reddick, they're all still, I mean, Reddick's a little more expensive on FanDuel and DraftKings, but they're all still, I would say, relative bargains, especially on FanDuel that doesn't price correct as quickly. Any other maybe one-off guys you can get behind, or is there another team you're looking at to round it out? Right now, like we said, we have a lot of those Dodgers and Indians guys are coming in the lineups, but is there another team or a couple other guys?
Well, sure. So let's I'm going to move up to a high level for a second and just talk about GPP strategy for today, so big tournament strategy. On a day like today, without a clear-cut, you know, slam-dunk stack team, if you can get a sense that the public perception is that there is a slam-dunk stack team, it's a great day just to get separation by playing someone in the next tier over. So, you know, a team like Kansas City, for instance, you know, not a huge, huge run line against Tyler Duffy, but no one is going to be out there talking about them just because they're not a very exciting. They're never a team that you're going to fist pump, get in there, stack necessarily. So, you know, while again they don't have tons of guys with huge upside necessarily, there just aren't a lot of teams with huge upside today. So they're a team I'm looking at. And I should say too, I doubt that even the Indians are going to be a team a lot of people are perceiving that way today. So maybe it makes more sense to try to get some more action in the GPPs today than would be normally.
I disagree with you on the Indians, I think, only because they have been so good lately. I think they'll be highly owned because they have been putting up runs in the short term, and kind of a lot of them, I think, like Chisenhall had a huge day yesterday, Santana went hard. So that team, I'm with you on the Royals, though. I like that. The problem, this is so funny with DFS, too, because the Royals, like, stink, right? Their lineup, Paulo Orlando hits leadoff. You know, they just don't have any guys. But on a day where there isn't anything out there, I like that call. I like those guys. They're coming cheap. You can roster one of those bigger arms with them pretty easily.
Yeah, right. So the Royals bottom four in the league against right-handed pitching this year, bad, right? But you can take a few of their best guys that bat near each other in the lineup and then take, you know, all great expensive hitters, you know, elsewhere. So, and again, you know, don't play those guys in your cash games. It's not a safe play by any stretch. But if you're looking for separation today, I think there are a lot of very, very reasonable ways to go find it. And it's just going to be a mishmash too. Like if you can picture yourself feeling annoyed because you're not the guy who has the person who hit the one home run that's hit tonight, based on how bad the hitters are, then don't play big tournaments. But I think it's a really interesting spot.
Well, this is the other day too, where it's fine to just roster a team against a good pitcher, also, right? So and just say I'm going to get massive separation on, I don't know, the Giants facing DeGrom, because who's going to play the Giants against DeGrom? You know, there's so many of those guys in there that you just – one of these pitchers –
you're giving up a lot less equity than you normally would be because there's no game in Coors or a game in Texas or something like that.
Exactly. And one of these pitchers, someone will get to them. They're just – you know, they're not infallible. They can have mistakes. So, this is strictly tournament strategy where you're like, okay, which one of these pitchers of this elite group that has – where their opponent has a lower implied run total is likely to you know, put string things together. You know, the Giants don't strike out a lot. That's DeGrom's, that's where he kind of feasts. He needs to strike guys out. And if you think that they can kind of get to him early because they elevate his pitch count, they can get some balls to come in. Yeah, all of a sudden, a team like that doesn't look so bad on paper.
Sure. And understanding that you'll probably lose if you do
that,
but you might win because no one will play that.
So. Right. All right. So I think that kind of sums it up for us today, where early slate looking pretty great. I think we agreed on that. Evening slate, great pitching, and we're probably going to be mixing things around with the bats unless something radically changes throughout the day. And also batting lineups are going to be really important. We're going to really look for a cheaper guy to come into the top of the lineup. That's extra. It's important every day, but it's extra important on a day where we know we're going to be paying up for pitching. So looking for some of those, you know, loser types that end up in the one or two spot that we can just get nice projected plate appearance on without giving up too much on the salary side. That's really what we're going to be looking for today. Buddy, it's been good. We're going to be back again tomorrow, right? We're talking baseball and maybe even talking a football release. We need to reconnoiter about that and figure out, but we're really, really close on NFL. Very, very excited with what we're going to be putting out there. It's going to rival some of the best tools in the industry. Really, really pumped.
Nice pull on reconnoiter there, by the way.
Yeah, one of my buddies uses that word a lot, and I never do, but I'm going to start putting it into my repertoire. We're from dailyfantasysportsrankings.com, DFSR.com for short. Head over, grab a free 3-day trial to our projection system, powered by Lineup Lab. It helps you one-button calculate optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings. Free for 3 days, $29.95 a month, and you are all set to go, buddy. I'll talk to you again tomorrow.
Yeah, man.
Later.